Thank you, Your Honor.
The next case is 03-2102, Cincinnati Metropolitan Housing Authority versus Cassandra Morgan. Ms. Gathaway.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the court, counsel. I'm Joy Gathaway here on behalf of the Cincinnati Metropolitan Housing Authority, the appellant in this case. And this case is important not only to the Housing Authority and Ms. Morgan, but also to all Ohio landlords. In order to commence an eviction proceeding under Ohio law, the landlord must do several things. One important thing is to serve the notice of adverse action, which is known as the notice to leave premises, at least 72 hours before commencing the filing of an eviction complaint. And the terms of, under which that notice is served is set forth in 1923-04, the revised code. And that service is provided in several ways. One, by certified mail, return receipt requested, by personally handing it to the tenant, or in this case, by leaving that notice at the usual place of abode or at the place where the tenant is sought to be evicted. The Cincinnati Metropolitan Housing did serve the statutory notice of 1923-04 in just that manner. It left that notice at the tenant's residence, which in this case was the usual place of abode and the place where the tenant was sought to be evicted. And it did so prior to filing the service of summons and complaint. The complaint in this case was received by Cassandra Morgan as evidenced by the certified return mail. And thus, the eviction proceeding passed the constitutional safeguards that the United States Supreme Court has set forth in Green v. Lindsay.
Counsel, is there anything in the record that indicates whether or not the tenant Morgan actually saw the 3-day notice, or is it clear that the notice was still there when she came home or opened her door, or could have neighbors, kids, what have you, ripped it down?
There was not anything. Ms. Morgan did not state that she never received the notice. What you have before you in the record is a transcript of the magistrate's hearing. At the hearing, the property manager testified
that she put the notice on the door.
Right.
And we don't know anything more than that about the notice.
We don't know anything more than that. Ms. Morgan neither says that, no, she didn't. I didn't receive the notice. Morgan was there at the hearing and did not refute any service of that 3-day notice.
Was Ms. Morgan, did she have a rental agreement?
Yes, she did.
And
she had a lease.
And what was the term of the lease?
The term of the lease, it is a public housing authority lease. And because it is a public housing authority lease, it is renewed. The tenant signs the lease, and then every year they have an annual review of their income and occupancy.
So when was the year up?
In this case, I'm not certain without reviewing the
but not
exact
yet.
Term. No, it would not have expired. The landlord did not seek restitution of the premises based on the end of the lease term, but non-payment of rent.
I understand that, but in reading the facts, I mean, you could look at this case and say, well, the First District is being hyper-technical. Now, counsel for the tenant says that every court of appeals that's looked at this issue agrees with the First District. But in reading the facts, it could be that they were technical because they thought your client was unfair to this tenant. There's an allegation that she attempted to pay the rent that the rent fell due on Sunday, and she attempted to pay it on Monday, and the building manager wouldn't take the rent. In that case, the Court of Appeals are looking at a fact pattern in which the tenant's pretty sympathetic.
Well,
is that perhaps what's going on here?
One could query that is perhaps what is going on here. However, what we are left with and what the Ohio landlords are left with is what the judgment of the First Appellate Court of Appeals, what they wrote, and the court speaks through its journal entries. That's what...
Has every other Court of Appeals reached the same conclusion as the First District?
I don't think any other Court of Appeals has reached that. And if the Court of Appeals wanted to limit its ruling to CMHA because it felt that CMHA as the landlord in this instance was being, as to use your words, hyper-technical, it could have done so, but it didn't. It said that in order to pass constitutional muster, the statutory notice, which is a precursory notice, it does not, the tenant still has her day in court by the service of the summons and complaint, but in order to pass constitutional muster, that notice must reach the interior of the premises, and that is too far of a stretch. The statutory framework provides that the notice must be left at the premises. In this case, it was left at the premises, and therefore, CMHA had properly served, and the court was with jurisdiction to hear the case. And the court did, to get to your other point of hyper-technical. The trial court is in the best position to hear the facts in this case and to hear the positions of the parties. The trial court saw Ms. Morgan, heard her response to it, and the magistrate listened to the case and made a determination.
Well, is the appellee's brief wrong when they say that she, that the rent fell due on Sunday and she attempted to tender the rent on Monday and was refused? Is that incorrect? That's in the appellee's brief.
I don't believe that is incorrect, but rent is due and payable to the housing authority. Again, that's a fact pattern that would the magistrate consider. And that rent is due and payable on the first of the month. And as you read through the transcript, you will see that the tenant is afforded 7 calendar days to pay the rent. And as you read through the transcript, you will also note that the housing authority had in the past worked with Ms. Morgan regarding the delinquent rent, and it extended another opportunity for her to cure the problems with her tenancy. So as far as the actual service of the statutory notice and the trial court having jurisdiction over this case, Cincinnati Metropolitan Housing Authority comported with the statutory requirements, and the statutory requirements that set forth under 1923-04 provide that notice must be served 3 days in advance of filing the summons and the complaint. That was done in this case. To impose an additional set of requirements under Green v. Lindsay for the statutory notice under 1923-04 is an error. And when the First District Court of Appeals interpreted CMHA's service of the notice as being inadequate because the notice did not reach the interior of the premises, it was overreaching in going to that level of interpretation. The notice to leave premises under 1923-04 justices is a precursory notice. It's not the summons and complaint. The method of reaching a tenant through the service of the summons and complaint was done by certified mail.
In the Green case, in the Kentucky statute, did not have the additional notice to leave the premises requirement?
I'm not clear on that. I know that in the Green case, what was at issue for the Supreme Court was the actual summons and complaint that the lawsuit had been filed. And the housing authority, as well as, will agree that the provisions of Green do apply to the service of summons and complaint, and in this case, that summons and complaint was served by certified mail.
Well, I assume the tenant agrees.
Well, I would
that,
hope.
The service of summons meets the requirements of the Green case.
I think the tenant does agree with that, and that service of the summons and the complaint is what safeguards her right to due process in this case. So there is no deprivation of due process. Your Honors, I may have forgotten at the onset to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. I noticed that the 5 minute time is at hand. Unless there's a question, I would like to reserve that time at this point.
Thank you, Ms. Gasaway.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Gillum.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. My name is Marquita Gillum, and I'm a housing lawyer for the Cincinnati Legal Aid Society, and we represent Cassandra Morgan, the appellee in this action. And first, in response to the questions by Justice Pfeiffer, I think it is important to remember in this case that Ms. Morgan was never asked, either by the magistrate at the initial hearing or by counsel for appellant, whether or not she ever received the notice that was apparently posted to the outside of her apartment door. And it was never introduced into the record by way of the testimony of appellant's agent. Not only was the notice never introduced into evidence, neither was the rental agreement. It was never attached to the complaint as required by Civil Rule 10D, which I realize is a separate assignment of error that wasn't reached by the lower court of appeals. But nevertheless, it's important. There's no notice in the record. There's no rental agreement in the record. And Ms. Morgan was never advised of her opportunity to ask any questions. In the case before you, the record that is before you is this. Cassandra Morgan lives in public housing. Rent in July 2002 was due on the 7th, which fell on a Sunday. Rent office was closed on Sunday. The rent was therefore tendered on Monday. The rent was rejected on Monday as allegedly late, and Ms. Morgan was thereafter sued for eviction for alleged non-payment of rent.
Do those facts help us construe the statute somehow? This is strictly a case of statutory construction, is it not? What's meant by leaving it at his usual place of abode? That's what the General Assembly has provided. Hasn't the Court of Appeals added some language to that statute? And well, answer that if you want.
Your Honor, we think the facts of this case demonstrate the soundness of the decision that the Ohio legislature made when it crafted years ago 1923.04 by requiring actual service of the notice. And it's in cases just like this that actual service would be important. There are three ways that the statute sets out you can perfect actual service, not just one, not just the one that the housing authority elected in this case. You can serve it by certified mail, not ordinary mail, certified mail, actual service. You can hand it to the tenant. You can have your agent hand it to the tenant, actual service. And then in the third manner, the notice can either be left, if it's a residential premises that's the subject of the intended eviction, you can serve it at the abode, or you can serve it if it's a commercial eviction. The legislature acknowledged it might make more sense to serve it at the actual premises from which the person is sought to be evicted.
So our real dispute is over what is at. Because she gets, does she not, a full second chance with all of those service requirements, and she got that in this case, did she not? So we're not talking about the service to the complaint, the summons, all of that. She got that as a certified mail.
That's right, Your Honor.
So we're only talking about the first one, and we're only talking about whether at means posting to the door or having to put it inside. As I see it, that's the single legal issue that really is here before us. And you're maintaining that at means inside, which is what the Court of Appeals held, correct?
Correct. And in fact, every Court of Appeals has held it. Either the notice must be slipped under the door, through a mail slot, or somehow find its way inside the premises.
Well, there was no evidence here, as there was in one of the cases cited, that that notices posted to doors frequently were missing children or somebody. We don't have any, none of those facts here.
No, Your Honor. Instructively, the housing authority appellant herein never put on any testimony that there would have been any difficulty in slipping the notice under the door or that anything would have happened.
Well, but this, again, the question is, the General Assembly has given us a statute, given us clear words. It's fairly broad. At the usual place of abode is fairly broad language. But is there the Court of Appeals? I'm having trouble understanding the rationale for the Court of Appeals decision, frankly. It says it's insufficient. Putting on the door is insufficient under 1923-04. Why? Is it because there's expectation that it won't be found by the resident? Is that the reason, or
I think,
what?
Your Honor, I think it's because it's a jurisdictional prerequisite. All property owners in Ohio are held to the service of the eviction notice, actual service of the notice, and even if the tenant fails to appear at the initial hearing on possession, in fact, the court still must secure evidence, real evidence, that that eviction notice was in fact actually served in one of the three ways: certified mail, personally handing to them, or leaving it at the premises. And every court of appeals before Morgan to address this issue has held that posting it on the door is failed service. And those counties are the Court of Appeals for Mahoning County, Hamilton County, Ross County, Cuyahoga County, Montgomery County, Greene County, and Franklin County.
Counsel, in those instances, was there not testimony that it was removed or that there was complications with the attachment to the exterior? Here we don't have any of that evidence before us.
Your Honor, in all of those cases, although they were served by a variety of means, in the cases where it was posted to the door, there wasn't any evidence, to my knowledge, in those cases below that the notice had been removed. It was simply that the notice had not found its way into the inside of the premises.
So it doesn't make any difference whether she received it or not. If you post the notice on the door, it's insufficient.
Yes, especially in this case, where no one asked her if she received it, and it was never made part of the record. That's correct.
No one asked her that question.
Pardon me?
No one asked her that question.
Correct. No one did, neither counsel for an appellant or the magistrate.
Counsel, in the other cases that you've cited, would it be true of all those cases that the tenant appeared in each one of those and said, I never got the notice? That there was some evidence in the record that the tenant claimed not to have seen the notice that was posted on the door.
If that argument was made in those cases below, Your Honor, to my knowledge, it was not noted by the appellate panels that then held that service on the door is failed service. I don't know of a single one. I think that appellant is arguing for the adoption of a rough equivalency test here that I don't think the Ohio legislature ever intended. The Ohio legislature intended no totality of the circumstances test to see if they received service of the other notices before ruling upon whether the jurisdictional prerequisite of receiving the eviction notice had been met.
Well, counsel, it would seem you want us to write a proposition of law that says under the door is sufficient, on the door is insufficient.
Correct, Your Honor. In other words,
And that really does seem ridiculous.
But it would be in keeping with every single appellate decision that's gone before. If a property
what you'd really like us to say is, if you post it at the premises, you must offer some evidence that the tenant actually received it.
Correct, or that in fact the notice found its way into the tenant's residence, that it was not left exposed in an environment over which neither the landlord nor the tenant could be expected to control what happened to the notice between its posting and between the time the tenant was or may have received it.
So you want another step in the proof, then, that the landlord must offer some proof that somehow the notice made its way inside the front door?
Correct, Your Honor. In other words, I want the Court of Appeals decision to be affirmed that at the premises means actual service, just as the other two prongs of the service statute require. If a property owner is not going to serve the notice by certified mail, if a property owner is not going to hand the eviction notice to the tenant, if the property owner is not going to have an agent hand the eviction notice to the tenant, and if a property owner is not going to, as is his right under Ohio law, open the door with his own key and stick the notice in, I don't think the property owner should then be exempt from otherwise actually serving the eviction notice.
Would we require, no. Go ahead.
No.
I'm confused. Did she receive the notice?
Your Honor, there's no record that she did. The court didn't ask her.
She never claimed that I didn't receive the notice.
No one asked her that question.
Well, you didn't volunteer the answer.
No, she appeared pro se, Your Honor. I honestly don't know whether she received it. There's nothing in the record, and it was never offered into evidence.
We're just assuming, then, that she didn't receive the notice.
The Court of Appeals based its opinion not on an assumption either way, but taking at face value the evidence that appellant only posted the notice on the door, the Court of Appeals, in keeping with its own decisions prior to Morgan, especially the Sanders case, and in keeping with the other appellate decisions that throughout the state, it held that posting on the door was insufficient service. Okay. It was not premised on an assumption either way, whether she received it.
It's very easy. If she came home and it was posted on the door, she received it then.
Yes, Your Honor, but that's not the record that's before you today. There's no record that she actually received the notice, either by way of its finding its way into her apartment or through her own testimony.
So really, it doesn't make any difference whether she received it or not, even if you put it underneath the door, because no one testified to that.
There are double problems in this case, because there is absolutely no testimony that she actually received it, not from her or anyone else, because of the method of choice that the property owner elected.
Although I understand ordinary mail isn't required here, when we say ordinary mail, there's a presumption that a person is going to get it unless they prove otherwise. And you don't have to go and make sure that the mailman physically puts the letter in somebody's hand to have ordinary mail perfection. You seem to be requiring some extra step in the statute that I have a hard time reading into it. I mean, the legislature is free to put that in if they want to, but I have a hard time with us putting that in. I don't care what all the other Court of Appeals said. I have a hard time reading the statute and finding how we can put that into it when it doesn't say it in black and white.
Your Honor, we would say that no additional step is required to find for Cassandra Morgan, because
the statute is quite clear. It goes through the certified mail, return receipt requested, handing a written copy to the notice of the defendant, and then it says, or by leaving it at his usual place of abode. It doesn't say leaving it within or out, so we would almost have to read words into the statute. It just says by leaving it posted on the outside of the door is certainly in compliance.
But within the statutory framework, Justice Resnick, where there are three ways to secure actual service, the other two are certified mail and handing it to the tenant, how could it be then within the same jurisdictional prerequisite the legislature would step back and create a catch-all provision short of actual service and say just taping it to the outside of the door? It doesn't say
I can think of a very good reason.
On the door.
Person refuses certified. Person hides all the time from service, doesn't want to get service. So what's a landlord to do other than, the idea of having a key to get in if you don't have a mail slot or a space underneath you can get it in is probably equally offensive. The legislature could have clearly said, you've got a lot of tenants that are problems, so we're going to give you another alternative. I could see a clear reason for that.
But, Your Honor, those are not the facts of this case. There's nothing in the record before you that
Counsel, if we're only concerned with the very facts of this case, it's pretty difficult to expand that consideration to make law for the entire state and to, in essence, insert words into a piece of legislation.
Your Honor, we would say that the new law would be the law that left the notice on the door. The statute at this point in time does not say leave the notice on the door to the premises. It says certified mail, handing it to the tenant, or leaving it at the premises. And every Court of Appeals panel in Ohio to reach this issue, including now Morgan, held that on the door was failed service. My final point before closing is this. Rent in this case was due on the 7th, which was a Sunday when the rent office was closed. The rent was rejected on Monday when the rent was duly tendered. No reasonable property owner, business, or institution of any kind treats people in this manner, certainly not this very court. In the rules governing the operation of this court, as posted on the website, and in specific reference to Rule 14, Section 3, the quote, the court tells the state, if the clerk's office is closed on the day your document is due or closes early that day, your document is due the next day the office is open. Appellant's position, therefore, that all rent must be paid early before any day on which the rent office happens to be closed is as contrary to the law of contracts as it is to good public policy. In closing, the Ohio legislature got it right when years ago it specified three ways to secure actual service of the jurisdictional prerequisite of the eviction notice. Every Ohio appellate court, including Morgan, got it right when it said service of a residential eviction notice posted only to the outside of the door is failed service. Have to go back and do it one of the other ways.
You need to sum up. Your red light is on.
Thank you, Your Honor. If appellant and amicus wish to begin serving eviction notices by only posting them on the door, we respectfully suggest that they go to the Ohio legislature. This court should not do here what the Ohio legislature is yet to consider. Accordingly, we respectfully ask that the decision be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Ms. Gillen. Ms. Gathaway, you've saved almost 5 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
As pointed out in response to the appellee's argument, this is a case strictly of statutory construction. In this case, at means at. The notice in this case was left at the premises. That is the entire basis of the First District Court of Appeals decision. And the Housing Authority fully comported with the statutory requirements as far as service of the notice and fully comported with the constitutional requirements with regard to service of the summons and complaint.
Counsel, I haven't taken the time to, and I'm not really inclined to take the time to read all of those Court of Appeals decisions that the appellee has cited, but there's apparently a big difference of opinion. She says that this has been addressed. I asked you about that earlier.
Your Honor.
And she's got them all in her brief. And you say none of those cases have anything to do with this issue.
Well,
now, which is it?
This is where my interpretation of where it is, and I'll go directly to one of the cases, Green Metropolitan Housing Authority versus Melody Manning.
The Dayton Court of Appeals.
Yes. And in that Court of Appeals, Manning, who was a tenant in this case, received a posted three-day notice. The trial court held that that notice was insufficient. Why? And when you get to the why of why that notice was insufficient, you understand that the trial court was not saying that posting the notice was the reason for the insufficiency. Instead, it determined that Manning was blind and that the housing authority in that case had actual knowledge that she had a sight impairment. So therefore, the posting of a notice in that case was not sufficient to apprise her of the fact that the eviction would be filed against her.
And you maintain that each one of these cases is factually distinguishable and that they weren't really getting the same place that the First District.
That is our position, as that the court in Green said, technically it will appear that the Green Metropolitan Housing Authority complied with the statutory requirements regarding the notice. However, we conclude that under the peculiar circumstances of this case, the notice and the service were insufficient. What would suffice is conspicuous manner, and they're talking about the conspicuous language that appears in the notice, for sighted persons is not adequate to provide notice.
Is Cassandra Morgan out of your facility?
No, she's been there for the entire 2 years because she's able to pay the supersedeas bond while this is still pending.
And paying rent?
She's paying the reduced rent of $25 a month during the entire 2 years that she's been here. As with regard to...
Well, let me ask a follow-up question. I find the on-the-door versus under-the-door problematic. I also find problematic your eviction of this person for non-payment of rent. Can we even reach that question? Is that the first district goes off on the door, under the door? They could have reached that, couldn't they?
They certainly could have. They had the argument that the appellee alluded to, which was the
in terms of procedural posture, could we get there?
I don't believe you can, Your Honor, because what is before you is what is in the judgment entry.
So it's up or down, she's in or out based on the door or under the door?
You're going to have the same hard question that every Ohio landlord has when it comes to determining who gets to reside in its premises. And the General Assembly in this case had it right. It, as noted, that it provided an out for landlords who could not serve their tenants either by certified mail, either by ordinary mail, or certified mail or personal service, because tenants on occasion wish to elude the landlord, specifically when there's a matter in dispute and there's a pending eviction. And therefore, service at the premises is good service. The trial court was vested with jurisdiction to hear this case, and we respectfully request that the case be reversed on that those thank reasons. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gathaway. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.